Welcome to Cynicism.
Yo, guys. Corona Watch 2020.
Welcome to our, well, it's not our first podcast since coronavirus started, really. We've been talking about this for a few weeks, but shit's gotten real.
Yeah, it just continues to get crazier and weirder, and self-isolation just does something to your brain.
Yeah, and I mean, I almost want to, like, make sure people realize, too, when we're recording this, we're doing it on March 19th, and I want to say that almost just because, like, I'm sure the episode we recorded last week is going to be dropping sometime this week that we're recording. And it's insane how different a place the world was just a week ago when we recorded that.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about, like, worst case scenario, maybe some movies will be delayed. The week before that, we talked about No Time to Die being delayed, and we were kind of like, yeah, well, you know, they're doing it mainly because, like, they also want it to have the Chinese audience, and obviously things are really rough over there. We didn't realize 2 weeks later we'd be there. I mean, first of all, you know, obviously me and Brian here, we're not experts. We're not doctors. We're not scientists.
But we are practicing some safe measures.
Yeah.
Like right now we sterilized the equipment that we're using. And we're more than 6 feet apart from each other.
Yeah, we're definitely implementing social distancing. And that's the main thing I think we want to start by saying is just, you know, obviously this is going to be a huge deal. It's going to be really scary. A lot's going to happen, and it's going to be really tough too. You know, self-isolating, staying indoors, practicing social distancing, and we really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I've got a top five list of things you can do to help combat the coronavirus or just slow it down a little bit.
Yeah, this is a top five list that's not movie related.
We love top lists. So here's a top five for how to help stop coronavirus. Number five, do you feel sick? Then you stay home.
Do that. Easy enough.
That sounds pretty easy.
Don't go party.
That sounds pretty, like, you know, easy to do. Number four, feet. Stay more than 3 feet apart. Like, look at your feet and look at somebody else's feet. I'm going to say, like, you know, 6 feet or more is fine. The reason why, if somebody's sneezing around you, those droplets that they're talking about, they have some hang time.
Yeah.
Apparently, the COVID-19 can survive in, like, that droplet form in the air for, like, 3 hours.
Yeah, and it might not even be a sneeze, you know? Some people, all of us, even to varying degrees, kind of release saliva when we talk. You know, there's some people who definitely do it to the point where you're like, yo, man, it's
you're
gross.
Spitting on my face.
It's gross. Step away. But all of us, to some degree, are doing that. And, you know, when you're in that close proximity with somebody, you're increasing the chance that you may spread something. So, you know, definitely keep your distance. There's a reason why they're kind of advising that right now.
Yeah. And number three, we've got face. Don't touch it. I know it's really, you're not going to be able to do that, like, to the 100% of the time, but, like, especially when your hands aren't clean, if you've touched a doorknob, if you've done something where you're like, you know your hands are dirty, just try to avoid touching your mouth, your nose, your eyes, because those are the places where the disease gets in.
Yeah, I'm going to say this is probably the hardest one for me to follow. I don't know if anybody else is kind of like me. Somebody says, like, don't think of something and then you, like, instantly think of it. It's kind of like that, but, you know, at least especially if you're going outside, you're going to be around other people, you want to be especially wary of that.
Yep. Number two, elbow, cough into it. So if you have to sneeze or you have to cough, do it, like, into your sleeve, into your elbow. It's pretty easy to do. I do it automatically these days. I don't know many people that don't do something of that nature.
I don't.
Yeah.
You
let it fly.
I normally grab. I mean, it's the idea is not to do it in your hands, right?
Don't put it in your hands.
So, you know, it's time to learn new safety and hygiene habits for all of us.
Yeah. And if you do sneeze in your hands and you do touch a doorknob or you get any kind of, like, groceries or something, you got to start washing your hands. This is the number one thing. Wash your hands. Because you know what? Soap and water is actually a really big combatant for removing the virus from your hands, because antibacterial stuff like a hand sanitizer doesn't do that. Like, using soap and water is actually the best way to remove like these pathogens from your skin because of how soap works. So there's a good Alton Brown YouTube video on how to wash your hands. I highly recommend it. It's only 3 minutes long.
And was that the final one?
That's the final one. I guess also just keep in mind, like, if you do feel sick or you're experiencing any kind of symptoms, look at your like state's website or your county's website to see if there's a place for you to get tested at, because maybe you feel a little under the weather, because a lot of times you may have it and the symptoms may not be severe. It's just really important to recognize where it is, and that will combat the spread of this.
Yeah. And I mean, as I said, it's going to be a weird time for all of us. I know me and Brian even kind of heavily discussed what we were going to do going forward with the podcast this week, but you know, we want to practice the safety tips and we still want to be able to bring you this show. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to provide you, you know, some entertainment, some lols, some information during, I'm sure most people listening are probably, probably feeling a little stressed out, especially with the self-isolation and staying indoors. You know, it's tricky, it's hard. But we're going to, as I said at the top, we're not medical experts, but we want to try to give you the best advice. What we are, though, are two people very passionate about movies. So what we're going to do is talk about the effect the coronavirus is having on the film industry. Because that to us is, you know, it's what this show is about. So obviously a lot has changed, Brian, since last week.
Oh yeah.
We were sitting here last week. We were talking about movies getting delayed. We were talking about that maybe starting to pick up, and now we're here. Theaters are closed.
Yeah. We just recently talked, before the podcast about our like Regal app that we were using, basically giving us an email that says, hey, we're not going to charge you because our theaters are closed and you can't use the app. So yeah, until our theaters open back up, don't worry about it.
And realistically, theaters, there's no theaters that I know of really that are open anymore. I know all major chains have suspended service, even in states where they're not closing bars or restaurants because of irresponsible politicians in those states. But the actual companies have stepped up and closed them. Most independent theaters have closed, and even the few that haven't, there's not going to be movies distributed in coming weeks that they're going to really have. So this is kind of something that's severely affecting the entire film industry. And in terms of two, I just want to say, before we get into the nitty gritty of the industry side of things, I do want to say too, because obviously if you're listening to this, you're probably passionate about film. You know, obviously with this, a lot of people are home and out of work. And you're probably seeing a lot in your social media feed about, you know, supporting local restaurants and businesses, because of they employ so many people. And because of, you know, while there's chains that are going to come out of this fine, you know, a lot of your local businesses are going to struggle and may shut. So I do want to just encourage people to support local independent theaters. You know, buy a gift card if you want to go back when they open up again.
Yeah, because buying a gift card right now, you don't have to use it right away, but it still allows there to be revenue going to
them. Yeah, and it helps those places stay open, because those are going to be the ones that are really going to be struggling both during this and to reopen when things finally do go back to normal. But as we said, movie theaters are closed. And I have to tell you, something happened this week that I kind of expected might happen someday. I didn't expect it to happen this soon. And that is, NBC Universal announced that the movies they currently have in theaters, The Invisible Man, Emma, The Hunt, would be arriving this Friday on video on demand, and that the upcoming DreamWorks Presents Trolls World Tour in home theaters everywhere, April 10th, will, as I said, be arriving on video on demand.
Just write those checks now, folks, because you're going to want to see...
you're getting a little heads up. You are definitely getting a Trolls World Tour episode from me and Brian.
Unfortunately.
But so this, I mean, this is very interesting for the film industry, right? Because of the thing is, theaters in a lot of ways have been kind of on the ropes. People are increasingly moving towards watching films at home. A lot of people too, I think, especially folks our age, but even younger than us, I think a lot of people who have grown up almost with Netflix. I mean, it's insane to think for someone like us, but there's a whole generation of people who are, like, starting college right now who, like, have grown up with Netflix streaming being there since they were, like, 9 or 10 years old. Like, this is just how they watch movies. And so, like, it's been hard for the theatrical model to keep bringing people in because of, you know, there's almost, like, the mentality of, like, why am I going to go out to a theater and pay, you know, 12 when I can watch Spencer Confidential on Netflix?
I can watch
Netflix.
As many things as I want back to back to back for $11 or whatever, however much it costs.
Yeah, which that's the only other thing that I will say about that. There is the kind of, like, thing of people are like, why will I watch that when I can watch blah, blah, blah for free? And it's like, it's not free. Like, you're still paying $11.99. You just forget that it's coming off your card every month.
Exactly. Or you're just sharing somebody else's account, and maybe it is free.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be hard for theaters. It's going to be really hard because once you introduce this business model, it's hard to see a way back. You know, I'm not sure what studios are going to do when theaters open up again, but it is kind of hard to be like, you know, to introduce consumers to the idea that you're able to get these movies that come out in theaters the moment they're available on your home TV, and now this is over and you can't do it anymore. Consumers are going to get used to that, and they're going to probably want that still.
Yeah, I can very easily see people going like, yeah, I'm going to pay the money to watch the movie right away at home. I don't have to drive anywhere. I don't have to pay for snacks.
Yeah, and we talked about the price point yesterday. For these movies, that's $19.99.
That's pretty brutal.
I don't know. I think, so my take on it is this, right? Like, I think if you're one person, that's rough.
Yeah.
But if you're, like, a family, like, if you're somebody going to be renting Trolls World Tour, you know, you're paying $19.99 for that. If you were to go to the theater with your family, with your kids, like, you're probably paying, like, $45. Like, but if you have, like, a family of four, two kids, you, your wife, like, that's $45 you're probably spending at the theater. I think for distributors, they're trying to think of how they can, it's not going to be the price of, like, a movie ticket, right? Like, it's going to be, because if they're presuming more than one person is probably watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking of, when somebody makes that purchase, right? Like, they're thinking of, if four people are in that room, which I think, I'll say maybe 50-50 times that's true. I don't know how true that is. We'd probably have to take some kind of poll on it. But, like, you know, I think for them, they're thinking, if we made this $9.99 and five people are sitting in that room watching it, that's like $40 we just lost on ticket sales. I think it's interesting.
But also, like, you know, when you go to the theater, sometimes you go to the theater multiple times. So you're spending more than just, like, that $10 to $15 range each time you get, like, each time a movie comes out.
Right.
So if I'm going to rent a movie, like, and I'm allowed to watch it one time, or maybe as many times as, like, I want in a 48-hour period.
Yeah.
But, like, spending $20 on that still feels pretty outrageous. I can see, like, $15. But even still, at that point, like, that's, like, the price point of a movie most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably what it's going to be. I think for, like, a new release, I'm all right with it. I think that's fair enough. I think, like, there's going to be a difference between how much a movie costs when it's in theaters, I think, as compared to maybe, like, 3 months later when it's available on Blu-ray or VOD release. I mean, it's going to be tricky because it's going to be right that like idea of like if a movie's also cheaper on VOD, like people almost, that's going to almost encourage people not to go to the theater even more, you know, like if a movie's like $8, because like we do have the luxury kind of in a way of that, like we live in Buffalo, like it's a city, but it's not a sizable city. Whereas like for us, like even on like a Friday night, if we go see a movie, it's like maybe at most what, $12-$13 if you don't have the pass.
Yeah.
But in cities like New York, like Los Angeles, you know, you're paying $18-$19 for a ticket.
When you live in like a rural area, like the ticket prices tend to be a little bit
smaller, probably like $7 or $8.
So like this does affect a lot of people in a very different way, especially with this price point being kind of high, like the same amount as what you paid to buy a movie. I feel like, hey, if I'm paying $20, I might as well just own it.
Yeah, I mean, I see kind of why they're doing it. You know, it's going to be interesting to see where the industry goes from this, especially because of like, you know, as we say, this is now, this is temporary, this is because of the conditions that are creating this. You know, studios are basically not doing this because if they want to move to a future form of distribution, but almost as a necessity. Like, if you've spent all this money marketing, I think especially I feel bad for here is a movie like The Hunt, because of it's like, this is a movie that was already originally supposed to come out last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got pushed back essentially because of there was what looks to me, and we'll probably talk about this more when we talk about the movie, kind of silly hubbub from like President Trump around the movie, which created a whole political storm, and then they had to push it back. And now finally, after all those that advertising, it gets released literally the weekend that theaters close. I think in our area, you were able to see it 2 days before theaters closed. I mean, I did get the chance to see it before that happened. I went Friday morning. It's, you know, they're mainly trying to recoup losses here. But it's going to be interesting, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this more in the future, especially as we see more movies get released this way. You know, I mentioned to you, too, that it was just recently announced Bloodshot will also be released this way. I won't be surprised if we have other studios following suit. We also have, and I don't think people have talked about this much, Warner Brothers are releasing like their version of the Disney Plus app next month, which is the like HBO Max thing, which will be all their TV content and their studio content.
Okay.
So I'll be interested, because if they haven't made a statement yet, if they're going to be releasing some of their movies on that app, because it seem to me that would be the smart way to launch that.
Like, it's probably the easiest way to do it.
Yeah. But I did want to, in that, discuss something that I found really interesting, though, in all of this, which is there's a Brazilian movie called Baccaro. This played at the Cannes Film Festival last year. And the reason why I find this movie interesting is because of the distributor for this movie is called Kino Lorber. They're an independent studio. And what I think is really exciting is this movie was supposed to be going a little bit wide in theaters this weekend, but obviously won't because of it. So what Kino has done separately, and I'll be interested to see if indie distributors follow this, is they introduce their own model for VOD this weekend, where the movie is going to be available for VOD, but you can only, and it'll be for $12.99, but you can only buy the let's call it a ticket through your local independent theater. So the theater is still getting some of the money from the distributor, and also the distributor isn't ruining their relationship with those theater chains.
Oh.
Which to me, I mean, that I find really exciting. I find that really impressive, because it's a way that these art house theaters that are going to struggle through this are still getting money for these movies.
So I imagine it's like a link directly on the theater's website or something.
Yeah. So like, for example, as I said, we're here in Buffalo, New York. The Little Theater in Rochester was supposed to be getting this movie this weekend. Obviously, they're not able to, so you can go to the Little Theater's website this weekend and buy a ticket for the movie, and then you'll get a VOD rental for $12.99 for 48 hours.
Oh, cool.
And I think that's really cool, especially because of it is something that continues to support the theatrical model as well. I'll be interested here because of, I think this is a really creative sort of workaround for this, and some distributors are wary of kind of destroying that relationship with theaters. I know A24 put out a press release basically saying they're not going to be releasing any movies on VOD because they want to give them the theatrical run. And I think that's also because they have those tight relationships with theaters. But I'll be interested to see if they maybe follow suit with this, because this is kind of a way where they, you know, recoup any losses.
It is an interesting workaround, especially since people can't necessarily sit in the theater, but like, you know, partnering up with theaters, like already established like websites to buy the digital ticket for a rental is cool.
And essentially that's essentially how it's being done as well. It's like you're paying the same price you would for a movie ticket at that theater, and the theater's getting the same share of that movie ticket that they would have if you actually went to go sit in their theater, and the studio is still getting their share. And yeah, I would love to see more indie distributors do that, because it would be really cool to see some of the movies that we were really excited about, like Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, Saint Maud, movies like those that were coming that necessarily aren't going to do huge numbers at the theaters, but people might be excited to watch at home when there's nothing to do right now. So, I mean, that's going to be really interesting to look at going forward. Yeah, we're in a really weird time right now.
Feels strange. My head is in this like mild dread cloud at times, and then other times it's just kind of like, this feels normal, but it also doesn't feel normal.
Yeah, I mean, we're only kind of a week into isolation right now.
Yeah.
And I know myself too. You know, there's also so much upheaval in everybody's lives right now. Sometimes too, you almost can't help but get into the morbid fascination of what's going on in the world. Like, there's times where I find myself just kind of like, I don't want to do anything. I'm throwing on MSNBC in the background and kind of just listening to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making me feel relieved, half filling me with dread. So I mean, we want to give something that alleviates some of that dread. We want to talk about movies that make us feel relaxed, or at least that we enjoy.
I'll say that mine might not be the most relaxing, but we got some entertainment coming up for
you. Yeah, we're going to talk about our favorite comfort movies coming up. We're going to dig right into talking about comfort movies.
Or movies that you can just stream.
Yeah, so, we'll talk about this a little here up at the top. You know, I kind of talked to you about, you know, what we were going to do for this episode, because obviously, you know, there's not really anything at this moment released because theaters are closed.
Yeah, I haven't been in the movie theater.
Nothing has been dropped just quite yet on VOD. And we wanted to still be able to give you something to listen to, something, a way to talk about film this week. And I proposed to you to do an episode just kind of counting down comfort movies that seemed like...
I think when you messaged me, I took it as, let's talk about some streamable movies.
Okay.
And like, and then later I looked at it and when I was making the list, and I was like, oh, he put comfort videos down.
Yeah.
And I don't really have those.
So that's what I wanted to talk about here. For you, what do you think of when you hear comfort movie?
It's pretty obvious. Like, a comfort movie is a movie that you just come back to over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you feel like either you watch it intently or you turn it on in the background and have it playing. Like, it's just kind of like one of those things, like white noise.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right on that. It's, for me, a comfort movie is, I'm somebody who, I see a shit ton of movies, no surprise there. I very rarely come back to films, pretty much unless one of two things. I am, looking to more intently review it, In which case, it's not serving for me the purpose of a comfort movie. It's kind of more, I just want to dig deeper into it. Or it's that thing that you said right there. It's kind of like, I'm not necessarily 100% intently locked in. This is something I already know how it makes me feel. And it's serving almost more as background noise because if it's something relaxing, I know I can come back to.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily use film that way. I think when I watch it, like, I'm like zoned in on it, mm-hmm. like at all times. So sometimes watching movies isn't necessarily relaxing for me.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's also just speaking of where we differ there is for me, I'm somebody who, like, I'm one of those people who, like, if I'm going to bed at night, like I need noise to fall asleep.
Oh.
I can't have just dead silence or it starts to creep me out.
I have to be like already falling asleep.
Yeah.
And then I get up and go to bed and then I fall asleep.
So, I mean, for me, it's very hard to just kind of like fall asleep. So I need something to kind of like lull me in.
Mm-hmm. Someone just talking you through it.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, I think that's
also... You can't handle the truth.
I don't know if I would watch A Few Good Men while trying to fall asleep. although I do find Aaron Sorkin's writing super comfy. So maybe. But yeah. So for me, a lot of these movies, too, they are exactly that. They're movies that sometimes I just leave on while I'm trying to fall asleep at night. You know, they're movies that are very near and dear to my heart. But, you know, as you said, your list is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, I kind of focused on a particular streaming platform.
Yeah.
Because all my picks are from Hulu. And which means, like, if you have a Hulu subscription, you can watch these for free.
You're in luck.
Yeah.
And I think I should say, too, with comfort movies, too, obviously that's such a particular and different thing for people. Like, comfort movies are so different from person to person. Like, we have a good friend of ours, Ben. We know, like, his comfort movies are, like, 80s genre movies. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars. You know, for him, that's like the pinnacle of like a warm, comfy blanket. And for me, I would never watch those movies when I'm like having a bad day. Like, I'm just like, this is too stressful. I don't want big action scenes.
I just love cartoons. So like when it comes to being like, if I were to watch something for comfort, it'd be like a cartoon series and not necessarily a movie.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that I definitely get that. I think for me, too, like, I had one... I kind of talked about the idea of comfort movies the other night with a friend of mine, and they mentioned that they always watch horror movies when they need a comfort movie.
Seems stressful.
And that's what I think the divide is. It's like, I think, like, some people hear and they're like, a horror movie when you're, like, having a bad day? That sounds awful. But I think there is, too, the other idea of, like, if you have something that's, like, really pressing in your mind... A horror movie is almost like the opposite of that. Like, it forces you to pay attention.
Good distraction tool.
Yeah. So you almost can't think of that thing that's bothering you. I think as I start to describe the movies that I consider comfort movies, you're going to very clearly kind of tap into what movies make me comfortable. And I think in a lot of ways it tells on myself, too. Like, it's these aren't just movies that necessarily... are just comfortable movies. They're movies that uniquely sort of match my interests as well. So I think you're going to find out a lot about me through these picks.
You may not find out very much about me personally.
but I've come up with a few movies that definitely are my type of comfort movie, and also some streaming picks too, because we know you guys need those right now as well. I'm actually going to let you kick it off, though.
No, you're going to kick this off.
Okay. So I'm going to mention, too, here in this, then. I do have some top five comfort movies, but what I also wanted to do here is some of the movies that make me feel most comfortable are also movies that a lot of people have already seen. So I kind of figured if people are looking for something to watch while they're home and they're self-isolated... They might not want to watch something they've seen 100 times. They might want to see something new. So a lot of these might be a little off the beaten path. I tried to throw in a few movies here that you might not necessarily have seen. And so one of these that I'm going to start by recommending is a movie called 24-Hour Party People. This is one of my go-to comfort movies. It's a film by Michael Winterbottom, who's done... He puts out almost like a movie a year, and he almost always works with Steve Coogan. If you've seen any of the Trip movies with him and Rob Croydon...
Which are wonderful.
Yeah, he's the one behind those movies.
Oh, damn.
This film is way before those. It came out in 2002, I believe. And essentially, it is a comedic biopic. It's a very loose biopic about Tony Wilson. And this is where we come to my very niche interests, but it is a very good movie. Tony Wilson is sort of, for indie music nerds, they might know him as the head of Creation Records, which was like the first independent music label. They signed Joy Division, who became New Order. They signed the Happy Mondays. They tried to sign the Smiths and failed. But he was like a TV show host who had bands play on his show and just became really invested in the music scene in Manchester in the late 70s and early 80s. And created his own music label that signed these guys and was kind of the birth of popular indie music. Steve Coogan plays Tony Wilson, and he is phenomenal in it. He's really funny. This movie has a very like breezy tone to it, where there is drama in the film. Anybody who knows what happened in Ian Curtis and Joy Division's story would expect there's some drama in it. But for the most part, it kind of plays with everything in a very cavalier way. There's also a lot of cameos from sort of famous luminaries in the independent music world from the 80s and 90s in here. It's very fucking funny. There's really weird, trippy parts. There's like a momentary alien invasion that happens for one scene and then stops, and is never really explained. There's some really weird shots where like they put a camera on a pigeon and the pigeon flies around with it. There's some weird stuff in this movie. But it's really goofy. It's a really wonderful character study. It's a movie I throw on whenever I'm having a bad day. It's 24-hour party people. It's worth checking out.
24-hour party people. Worth checking out. Just for that pigeon thing, I feel like.
Yeah, man. Check out them pigeons.
Check out them pigeons. All right. So recently, I went back and explored a particular movie that I remember seeing back in the 90s. And I watched it on TV then. And it was super fun and like made me feel weird because I didn't understand what was happening. Mm-hmm. I kind of like wasn't old enough to comprehend what was going on because it was kind of going over my head. But the movie is The Matinee, or just Matinee, I think. It's starring John Goodman. And holy shit, man. This movie still holds up. It's super funny, extremely bizarre. Kind of like follows these kids in this school who are really excited about this new movie coming to town. But there's also like war is going on, so everybody's worried about being bombed. And this guy is traveling to Florida because it's so close to Cuba that I think they're actually afraid of like Cubans like bombing Florida.
Yeah.
And then he comes in, he's like, yeah, when people are afraid, that's the best time to show a new horror film.
Yeah.
And so he's setting up this theater, like he's putting a lot of money into this theater, like kind of making it to where like there's explosions going off, kind of like Muppets 3D theater.
Nice.
In a way, it's super fun, and like at times like you're not really sure what's really happening in the theater and like what's just kind of like a parlor trick that guy's created.
Yeah.
A couple of interlocking storylines throughout, like, you know, the kids in school, like, I like this guy and I like this girl and like we should all make out, and like, uh-oh, her boyfriend's back and now you're in trouble because he has a knife. There's a lot of stuff like that, but it's really fun to watch. It's very funny. John Goodman just delivers.
So underrated. Oh, he's like the greatest.
He's incredible. And just like you're going to recognize a ton of the actors in this movie. I can't list off their names because I don't remember their names. There's like, hey, it's that guy. Hey, it's that guy.
It's
hey,
a whole movie full of that guy.
It's a whole movie full of that guy's. The actor from Erie, Indiana is in it. If you remember that TV series.
It's a lot of that stuff though too, of like when you watch a movie with like your mom or like your uncle and they're like, who's that guy? He was in that thing.
Yeah. Or they say a name and you're just like, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. But yeah, it's a super wonderful, super funny. It went over pretty well with me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I you know what? I think I saw like part of that movie as well when I was really young, and I haven't gone back to it. And even just when you mentioned it the other day, because you kind of texted me about it, I kind of just Googled it again real quick to be like, oh, wait, what was this movie? And I was like, yo, this looks awesome. I need to check this out.
And if you weren't sold on what I just told you, the director also did Gremlins.
Oh, fuck. What's his name? is it Joe Dante?
Probably.
Joe Dante.
We'll pretend that's who it is.
I think he also did The Howling as well, werewolf movie.
Yeah, so this movie is available for rent for like $4 on Amazon Prime, but it's totally worth it. Like, it's very fun watch.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to move into yet another recommendation as a comfort movie. And again, this might be one that I suspect you haven't heard of. And again, like 24-hour party people, it's one that's kind of uniquely tailored towards my interests. And it's a movie called The Damned United. This is a movie that's, I don't want to call it a biopic. It's more a period piece about the English football team Leeds United in the 70s. And it stars Michael Sheen, who you might remember from Frost Nixon, which also is the movie it shares the screenwriter with. It's written by Peter Morgan, who I think is kind of like one of my go-to comfort screenwriters. Peter Morgan also did the films Frost Nixon. He did Rush with the guy who plays Thor. Chris Hemsworth. We totally just became my mom.
I was like one of those Hemsworth boys.
But he wrote Frost Nixon, he wrote Rush, he wrote The Queen. There's the show The Crown on Netflix right now that he's the kind of creator of. What I like about Peter Morgan's writing is that he takes sort of like these moments in history and finds a way to not make it feel kind of static. Everything's about kind of character relationships. I would almost say in a weird way, like almost all of his movies, apart from The Queen, are almost all about sort of like weird male relationships, like kind of the problems with masculinity in the relationships and the things that kind of prevent people from showing their real emotions. That kind of suppression, but also kind of like beautiful male friendships as well. And he does it with like a kind of lightness, where his movies never feel particularly heavy. They always are move at an even pace. The film was directed too by Tom Hooper, who would go on the year later to make The King's Speech, which would win Best Picture. And this was kind of his run-up to that. And what I would say is actually a much better film than The King's Speech. And two, with it starring Michael Sheen, he's kind of like a very charismatic presence. He's kind of known for like the actual person he's playing in real life, Peter Clough, was known as this guy who was very charismatic, kind of always had zingers. There was kind of famously like, not a real duel, but kind of like a public sort of spat he had with Muhammad Ali in the 70s, where they kind of were constantly just on TV sort of dissing each other. But
what a guy to get into a spat with.
I know, right? Like the one person who can knock you out in a heartbeat. But it's funny. They would just like talk shit about each other on TV. But it's also, what I like about it too as a sports drama is it does it in a really interesting way where a lot of times when you watch a sports drama, it's about, you know, how, like, this coach comes along and takes, like, a bunch of scrappy underdogs and, you know, leads them to win the championship.
But, oh, coach, I can't make it to the game.
And this is kind of the complete opposite of this. This is about, basically, this coach who has such, like, an egomaniacal sort of rivalry with another team that his only dream is to coach this team just so he can prove he'd do it better than the old coach, and then completely destroys the team in the process and, like, takes the biggest team in the country and just, like, bombs them down into the lower leagues. But in the process, it's kind of about the friendship he has with his assistant coach, and about him sort of learning to be a better father and better husband in his family. And it's beautifully shot. It's not a movie that's terribly heavy, but it's very well written. You know, you have an Oscar-winning director, Oscar-winning screenwriter behind this movie, and I obviously am somebody who loves English culture and loves football, and so this is a movie I throw on when I want to relax and when I want to just enjoy good sort of witty repartee. So that's The Damned United. And, you know, if you always thought The King's Speech could be a little bit better, watch this, because it could be.
Well, I'm going to move forward with a movie that is kind of whimsical and fun. It is a little somber at times, but it was filmed partially in the town of Cullman, Alabama, where I used to live. It's called Big Fish, and it's streaming on Hulu.
I love this movie.
Big Fish is awesome, and it's just one of those things where it's like, have you ever had, like, a family member who just told, like, the greatest stories, but, like, also wasn't necessarily there for you as a father? This movie kind of focuses on a father and son relationship. It's so fantastical at times, it's hard to believe. And, like, just the way they choose to show a lot of the story elements. You have Danny DeVito in there, you have Ewan McGregor in there, you have, what is his name? Billy Crudup?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you also have the guy who plays older Ewan McGregor, who's the dad, and I forgot his name.
Oh, I forgot too, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah. We're doing a lot of that guy's.
Doing a lot
episode.
Of that guy's, but, like,
you're gonna have to just tolerate just, it. We've been sitting inside all week.
You can deal. It's fine. It's but it's so beautiful, and it's one of the few times where, like, you actually get to see, like, a really bright side to Tim Burton. Like, if you're not a fan of, like, the creepy darkness that he tends to put out there with all the black stripes and people with, like, blacked out eyes and stuff, this is pretty opposite of that. It feels very, like, fairy tale-ish, and it's very nice. I sometimes forget that this movie exists, but then I come back to it and go, oh, honestly, this is probably categorized as a movie that I would rewatch just because I love it so much. If you've ever also seen the movie or the TV show Over the Garden Wall, like, it's like a Cartoon Network animated series, they kind of have, like, a similar vibe. I would say Over the Garden Wall is actually a little darker. But definitely watch Big Fish. It's got a great cast, it's got great visuals, and it's very entertaining. It's funny, it's sweet, it's sad, but it ends, like, it also ends in a very acceptable way.
Yeah, I just want to back you up on that one too, because of I'm somebody who, I've stated this I think before, I kind of hate Tim Burton. I'm not a fan at all. But there are two films that always stand out in his sort of filmography that I do really like. And one of them, I think, is pretty obvious. It's Ed Wood. It's a phenomenal movie.
Ed Wood is incredible.
That's definitely my favorite. But Big Fish is one that has kind of, like, a mixed reputation, but I love that movie. I think it's such a great sort of departure from his regular style. It is a little cutesy at times, but that's kind of almost why I like it. It feels like an adult fairy tale. Ewan McGregor, you get, like, young Ewan McGregor when he was, like, so full of energy in the movie. And it's just, it's such a warm, human movie. And I think that's something that most Byrne movies don't have, which is kind of what it keeps me from them a lot of times. And this one's kind of just like overflowing with like compassion. It's just like, learn how to forgive people, learn how to accept people as they are. And it's really beautiful. And I kind of cry every time I watch the ending.
It's very sweet.
It's a really good movie. And so I'm going to move on to my next pick as a comfort movie. And this is going to be a little bit of a pivot. It's not necessarily a movie you haven't heard of or haven't seen. But I feel like it's kind of a movie that's been underrated, in my opinion. So what I'll say is the movie I was going to put on this list was High Fidelity. But I feel like most people have seen that. Or
I haven't seen it.
Check it out. You'd like it, I think. I wanted to pick a movie that's kind of related to it that I think less people have seen. And that's About a Boy.
Oh.
Essentially, I'll start by saying Nick Hornby is probably my favorite author. I've read pretty much every book he's written. High Fidelity, I think, was the first of his books that was adapted into a movie. And then About a Boy followed a couple years after. And it was the first screenplay that he wrote himself. So when the movie came out, it kind of underperformed in the States. It actually was a huge hit in the UK and in most of Europe, and actually went on to do really well. But just weirdly, in the US, it kind of completely bombed. And that was also because it was completely misadvertised. Hugh Grant was obviously like the biggest rom-com star.
Ladies loved Hugh Grant.
Yeah, late 90s, he was the biggest like rom-com heartthrob. And so the studio kind of advertised this as a new Hugh Grant rom-com. And it's not. in fact, I would say what romance there is in this movie doesn't really come up until like the last half hour. It's very simply kind of a story of this dude who's kind of a douchebag, who is a bit of a womanizer, and he ends up in his attempt to kind of meet women, pretending that he's a single father, and he goes to like these meetings where other single parents meet. And in the process, he ends up meeting this woman whose friend has a son, and the movie ends up becoming about their friendship. The son kind of tags along on like a picnic and then becomes weirdly fascinated with Hugh Grant's character and just thinks he's like the coolest guy. And this is like a kid who's like bullied, doesn't really have friends, who weirdly enough is played by Nicholas Hoult in his first role here. He was like 13 years old.
Oh, little baby Nicholas Hoult.
And, you know, now you'll see him in movies like The Favorite.
Or Warm Bodies.
Yes, I think that's an underrated movie. I like that movie.
I think Warm Bodies is pretty fun.
What I like about the movie, too, though, is almost all of Nick Hornby's movies just have, like, this very great conversational tone. And they're always about they're always basically about people who are super passionate and aware about pop culture. I mean, that started with High Fidelity, but a lot of times movies almost sort of seem to ignore the outside world. And these are characters who, like, are constantly talking about music, watching television, talking about films. And it's just a really charming story. It also doesn't take easy sort of outs. Nick Hornby's stuff, I don't think, ever kind of cheats or takes corners. And I also think for Hugh Grant, an actor who I think arguably has had kind of an up-and-down career, this is, like, for me, maybe tied for the best performance of his career with his performance in Paddington 2, which absolutely slaps if you haven't seen it. He plays...
I need to watch one of these Paddington movies so that I can be like, does it slap?
Yes. He plays the villain in Paddington 2, and it is... beautiful. It's just a really warm, charming movie. It's not anything, again, that is too sort of abrasive or overly showy. I did watch it actually just this morning in preparation. I'll say if anything does feel dated about it, the editing in this movie is really bad. There's kind of like a lot of what are they called, like swipes where it's just like you're literally seeing the slide like it's an 80s movie, and rough stuff, folks. But the rest of the movie is great. It's also got a entire soundtrack by Badly Drawn Boy, who's kind of like a Manchester folk artist who I love, and I literally listen to his soundtrack all the time still. Yeah, it's a really warm, funny, and I think I just gravitate towards great writing, like good, sharp, kind of quippy writing, and this movie has that in spades, so... Yeah, check out.
I mean, I'd hate to watch a movie that wasn't written well.
Well, I think you have a lot of movies that are more plot-centric. I love movies that are just like kind of very back and forth sharp dialogue.
So we're looking at the dialogue here.
I'm a dialogue guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the reason why I like Knives Out, for example, so much.
It's quite good.
So, but I'll let you move on to one of your next picks.
Man, so there's so many movies to pick from out there, and I'm going to pick a movie that kind of surprised me, because I wasn't a fan of a movie that came out around the same time, Wonder Woman, but there was a movie that kind of focuses more on the creator of the comic, as well as his romantic relationships, and this is Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. And this basically has to do with Professor Marston is credited with his wife, Elizabeth, for creating the first lie detector test, as well as being pretty progressive when it came to like their relationship style, because both of them ended up being in a polyamorous relationship with one of their students, whose name is Olive Byrne. This movie kind of follows through how that happened and like what they did to develop the lie detector test and like what metrics they used to come up with that. Also taking that and kind of like applying it into a storyline that ended up being Wonder Woman. So like the original Wonder Woman comics is kind of a little different from what you are seeing on screen currently. And this movie shows those things, and it shows the artists that were like working on it, because he was just writing it. And then he was going to like Marvel and saying, hey, I want to do this. And like they picked out an artist that worked with him to make the book as well. He also was working with his wife and like his, I guess, their girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they were coming up with like ways to make the story more interesting and like figuring out ways to like develop dominance. I guess the original Wonder Woman comics were really about domination.
Yeah, I've heard there's kind of like a lot of like sort of BDSM undertones to it.
A little bit, but it's...
Which is cool. No kink shaming here.
I mean, really, it wasn't. It was pretty interesting to watch and like just to see like the kind of social conflicts that they find themselves in because of their relationship and because, you know, they started having a family. It's really fun to watch that and just kind of, I think it's more like interesting to watch that because it kind of gives you an idea of like how things have always kind of existed. It's just you have to know where to look for it. And this movie kind of like shows it in the forefront. I think the only downside I would say to this movie is they do kind of like Hollywoodify the images of these people. Like they're a little bit more attractive than the original folks were. But you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think the relationships that they were probably able to create were beautiful. The movie is wonderful to watch. Do highly recommend. It's on Hulu and it's free.
Yeah, that's one I got to check out. I heard a lot of good things about that movie when it was released, and it was one of those movies where I had a lot of interest in it and just never got around to it. I think it was only in like theaters here locally for like a week. One of those, which happens to too many indie movies.
It's like I remember seeing a trailer for it and then like all of a sudden accidentally just like scrolling across it like one day and going, oh,
yeah,
I meant to go see this.
Yeah. So I definitely want to check that one out. So then on my list, we're getting to the movies that I have three left here that aren't so much obscure. these are just like my three all-timers. the ones that I go to probably most often. Or, well, I'd say there are probably three in my five. Two I'll talk about in a little bit. But one of these is Rushmore.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I have to introduce this movie. It's
show of hands, how many of you have ever seen Rushmore? We don't know what you're doing.
Empty apartment.
Why did you raise your hand?
This is sort of Wes Anderson's breakout movie. He did do Bottle Rocket before it, but this was kind of like the movie that put him on the map. If you haven't seen it, it stars Jason Schwartzman, who plays... I don't even know how to describe the character of Max Fisher.
Freaking weirdo.
Just a weird sort of very like nerdy anal
confidence weird, out the wazoo.
Yes, but weirdly confident guy who's like obsessed with the school of Rushmore that he goes to. He's like the head of every club. He keeps trying to get failed so he could stay there forever. And he falls in love with the kindergarten teacher at the school.
Oh, man.
Who he continues to not realize is definitely not interested in him. And he also befriends the father and kind of one of the donors to the private school. Who's played by Bill Murray in this movie. And Bill Murray's character also falls in love with this kindergarten teacher. And that starts this kind of duel they have to try to win her heart.
From an adult man to a boy in school.
Yes.
So weird.
And I love this movie with like every bit of my heart. This is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. It's super fucking funny. There's so many great lines here, and again, I think we talk about what really comforts me. It's just great dialogue, great funny quippy dialogue in films, and there's so many lines in here that like I've quoted on a regular basis. The line of are those your OR or these are my OR scrubs, oh are they, is all time great.
I forgot about that. That's good.
And when he just gets increasingly drunk and hostile at that dinner, I wrote a hit play. The performances in this movie are incredible.
I have to rewatch this movie. I forgot all about it.
I still think to this date, Jason Schwartzman has never been better in any movie. Bill Murray, I think this is like the movie that made him... Even though it's a very funny fucking performance, this is like the movie that made him also kind of a dramatic actor. There's sort of great moments in this, like the kind of like the scene where he's kind of just in like a malaise of like existential ennui and he's like going swimming in his pool where it's actually like really dark.
Did you say a malaise of existential ennui?
Yeah.
What a Wes Anderson.
The Wes Anderson is pumping through my veins.
It's like you see if you have the subtitles on in that part of the movie, it just says that in the bottom instead of like thrilling music.
Which also is another great thing to talk about here is like there's just so many good music cues in this movie. Like every Wes Anderson movie has like these amazing needle drops. You have like a lot of like British 60s British Invasion stuff, the Kinks, the Rolling Stones, Creation, T-Rex, like all that kind of stuff. I think this is just like one of my all-time favorite movies. If you somehow have not seen it, just go do it. You won't be disappointed. And if you are, don't talk to me. But yeah, no, that's Rushmore, one of my all-time favorite movies and comfort movies.
Very nice. I'm going to talk about a movie that I just watched last night. It's kind of like a fantasy, little bit of a mystery movie. It's called Border. It's playing on Hulu right now. This movie is kind of strange, and like if you've ever seen the trailer for it, it kind of focuses on this person Tina, who looks like she has like a physical deformity. Like her face is very like, almost, for lack of a better term, kind of grotesque. It's just kind of like she looks kind of animalistic, and everybody around her is, you know, looks more human than she does. So she spends part of this movie just kind of figuring out, like trying to figure out like who she is, because she ends up meeting somebody that looks very similar to her. And it's kind of like shocking how similar this other person looks to her. She also has an ability. She can smell your fear. Like she
creepy.
But she uses that because she is a border patrol officer, and she can tell when people are crossing the border with too much alcohol, and she can tell you exactly how much alcohol is in that bag.
Interesting.
But like she uses it a couple of times, but she is like kind of like works with the police force to identify things that are going on. She develops a relationship with a person that looks similar to her and starts to create a little bit more chaos in her life by saying like, hey, you're more like me than you realize, and I think there's something that you don't understand. So the mystery kind of like pumps in there, and she is constantly just treated like garbage by people around her. Like, you know, based on her like appearance, people are treating her differently. Based on her mannerisms, people are treating her differently, and she kind of gets dragged through the mud a little bit. Like, and but then when she meets this other person, things start to like feel more natural, and she's like, oh, why does this feel so familiar, and I don't know anything about this, but this feels right. The movie does play with some gender roles at times, and which is really interesting. I don't know if it like fully sinks into that, like in any sort of
explores
a meaningful way. Like it does it in a way that's very shocking at one point. But it is a very interesting movie to watch, because Tina as a character is like, I think, is just tired of getting fucked with. So yeah. Like this movie just kind of like follows her evolution into her new life, which is pretty fun.
Well, this is another case of a movie recommended where it's like one of those things where I definitely wanted to catch it and just never got around to it. So I'm glad you recommended it. I'm going to have to check it out. I remember actually it was up for makeup and for foreign film, right?
Yes, it's a Swedish movie.
Yeah, I remember it was up at the Oscars, not this past year, but the year before that. And it was one of those ones just couldn't get around to, even though people kept telling me how great it was.
Yeah. It's wild. It's weird.
So what I'm going to do for my next one is kind of the same kind of cheat I did when I talked about High Fidelity and About a Boy at the same time, which, like with that, High Fidelity is the movie that's in my top five, but I recommended About a Boy. Likewise with that, the movie that's actually in my comfort top five is Frances Ha, but I've talked enough about that on this
show.
We
all know you like Frances Ha.
So what I'm going to do instead is talk about Mistress America, which I don't think as many people saw. And this is the second film that Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig wrote together. I kind of like to think in my head that like what Greta Gerwig has done as a writer is kind of in a weird way made her own trilogy without necessarily ever directly linking these characters. If you've seen Lady Bird, you know Lady Bird kind of follows this girl living in Sacramento, a teenager, and she moves to New York to become sort of a writer and goes to NYU, and that's how Lady Bird ends. And Mistress America is about a girl who's studying writing at NYU and about her experiences there. And basically, again, like Frances Ha, this movie stars Greta Gerwig, and it stars Lola Kirk as well. And basically the premise is that Lola Kirk is like this girl who just started at NYU. She doesn't really know anybody in living in New York. And it turns out her stepsister? What is it called when your parents marry and you have a new sibling? Is that stepsister?
That's a stepsister. Okay.
I just wanted to, I always fuck that up. I'm like, sister-in-law, stepsister.
Are you my sister-in-law?
But yeah, so her stepsister is also living in New York and is played by Greta Gerwig. And she's kind of like this total like free spirit, like living in her early 30s. She's kind of just carelessly moving place to place around New York, from job to job, from boyfriend to boyfriend. But she has almost like this kind of like supernatural sort of charisma and charm to her. Like everybody kind of seems to fall under her spell. Even though as the movie goes along, you find she's really kind of broken and not a great person. Or maybe she is, but just kind of, you know, very broken and not as as put together as she seems. And it's really just a wonderful movie about female friendship and the bond these two form together. If you've seen any of Greta Gerwig's films or Noah Baumbach's films, again, you know the kind of dialogue that populates them. It's very quippy. It's very back and forth. I think this might be the straight, like, funniest movie that Noah Baumbach's made. It's probably the one with the least kind of density or, like, emotional weight to it. This movie is at times just a straight-up, like, screwball comedy. Like, it's definitely kind of looking back to films of the 30s, like The Philadelphia Story and stuff like that, where you have this, like, very rat-a-tat sort of style of delivery of dialogue. It's also just got beautiful photography of New York City, which for some reason, I think cinematically, every time I see New York on film, there's something that just draws me to it. It makes me feel really calm, really happy. And I love photography of the city that kind of romanticizes it. And this movie has a lot of that. It's great performances, especially again from Greta Gerwig. I kind of miss seeing Greta Gerwig as an actress on film, just because as great a writer and director she is, she's also just such an incredible actress. And she's so funny in this movie. There's also a great soundtrack and score to it. It's also, if you're looking for something very easy to watch, it's not even 90 minutes. I think it's like 83, 85 minutes. It's a quick watch. And if you're an indie rock nerd like I am, there's also a good cameo from the band Dirty Projectors in the movie.
Ooh.
So,
but would you recognize them?
Yes. Yes, they are. It's literally a scene takes place at one of their concerts.
Well, okay. It sounds pretty obvious.
although they don't tell you, like, the band whose concert it is.
But when you hear them sing, you're like, okay.
Well, even then, they don't actually have the music playing.
What the hell?
I know, it's so weird. But Mistress America is something I highly recommend if you love Frances Ha, if you love Lady Bird. This is like the middle kind of bridge between them. So check it out.
Yeah. So I was going to talk about an anime movie that I really like and I think is pretty classic mainstay, and that was Akira. But I think a lot of people know Akira and have heard about it. So I'm going to talk about something that I also watched very recently. Based off a recommendation from a visual effects channel, the movie's called Gantz Zero, or Gantz O. It's basically, even though it's like a Japanese animation, it is full CGI animation, and it's just like, if you've ever seen like the Final Fantasy Advent Children movie, it's like that level of CGI.
Oh, interesting.
And so it's really... it's visually fantastic to watch. The premise, though, is there is a game that happens in the real world where this orb is like, okay, so time to play a game where you fight these demons and monsters in real world environments, and they're happening in like Osaka and Tokyo, and like it's just like, oh my god, like this, it has real world implications.
Mm-hmm.
But what they've done is this same orb is also brought in people who have just recently died.
Oh, interesting.
And they brought them back to life specifically for the purpose of fighting these creatures and collecting points so that they can upgrade their armor, upgrade their weapons, so that they can fight against these demon monsters more easily. It is incredibly violent, but like it's one of those things where like if you're really into action, this is definitely like way up there on these action movies, because it's probably flown under your radar for so long. You probably saw it and we were just kind of like, whatever. Like you probably saw it and thought it was pretty dumb. I did the same thing. because this movie's been out for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so when I recently watched it, I was just kind of like blown away by how awesome like the animation is, and how some of the character design is really funny to watch, but it's just like some of it's a little gross. Like,
nice.
There's literally a character who he like multiplies his body, but then like can also is like shape shifting into basically a boob monster. It's weird. It's like the only time, it's the only like nudity in the movie, and it's like pretty it's awful to see on the screen. It's just kind of awful to look at, but yeah, it's, but they're fighting these things, like there's like a head that's like rolling around the city, and it would like it'll like launch itself in the air and then like land down on somebody's body. But like the people who have died, they can win their freedom from the game and come go back to a regular life, or they can bring somebody else back to life who's lost their life in the game based on like point values. Super fun visual movie to watch. It is extremely cheesy.
That sounds good to me.
It's extremely cheesy.
Sometimes that's what you want, like, right about
if,
now.
I mean, like, if you like this, as cheesy as it gets, it's like, I have to do this, I made a promise kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get. It's not a very long movie.
Right on.
And also, it's just kind of like, holy cow, I was not expecting that. It's very creative. And some of the weapons that they use are kind of infuriating because they kind of work on a delay.
Okay.
So in the sense of like, it's a gun, but you don't know if it worked right away until like a couple seconds later. It creates a little bit of tension, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. Well, that was one I'll admit I definitely never heard of. It sounds kind of in the same vein as Akira, which I'm a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it sounds weird. It sounds a little gruesome, a little cheesy. It sounds up my alley.
Kind of like a horror. It's more like a horror action film.
Tight. Well, I'm going to go ahead then and not beat around on the bush on this one. There's no ulterior recommendation. There's no caveats to it. It's not obscure. It's my go-to comfort movie. It's Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead.
It's like arguably one of my favorite movies of all time. Again, like Rushmore.
Whenever you mention Shaun of the Dead, I just think of that like that Queen moment where like they're hitting.
Don't
the
stop me now.
Don't stop me now. It's so funny.
This is probably the movie I've seen most in my life. I'll put this on probably once a week trying to fall asleep. So it's at least in the background a lot. I love Edgar Wright. I've said it before. I think of every filmmaker working today, he's my favorite. He makes such sort of vibrant, just funny, warm human films. When you make a movie that's essentially an homage to a genre, there's so many ways in which it could just feel like a spoof. You know, this so easily could have been a Scary Movie. But it's not. This is him earnestly making kind of an homage to the horror movies he grew up with and the ones that he loved, the George Romero films. And he wants to tell a story that takes place in that world while respecting its rules. And he also has points to his movie. I would say almost the vast majority of his films are in some way or another a coming-of-age story. I mean, in Shaun of the Dead, it is essentially about kind of like, an arrested adolescence where it's like this guy who's not matured, hasn't grown up yet, and, you know, this sort of zombie pandemic forces him into having to become a grown-up. And it's not easy for him to put behind his childish ways. And it's just so fucking funny. There's so many good jokes in this movie. And what's amazing about it is it's so layered in the fact that, like, I've seen this movie probably well over 100 times, and there's some new joke I pick up every time I watch it. Some little thing in the background. You know, there's some really like weird hidden ones too. One of my favorite that's hidden is you know, in the early scene in this movie, Sean essentially gets dumped by his girlfriend. He goes to a pub to kind of drink away his sorrows right before the zombies appear, and his buddy Ed is kind of outlining what tomorrow is going to be like. You know, he says like we're gonna come back. We're going to, you know, get shots of Sambuca. We're gonna come back to the Winchester. And you realize when watching the movie a few times that the order of everything he says is gonna happen the next day is actually the plot of what happens in the movie. Like the shots are literally like gunshots. They come back to the Winchester to hide from the zombies. Like he layers it so brilliantly. There's like five or six different events he outlines there, and I only realized that then again on like my 30th viewing of this fucking movie.
But if it's your first time, you'll know.
Yeah, now you know. Sorry, I ruined it for you. It's just to me the funniest movie ever made. I laugh every fucking time. It's. As you mentioned with that queen scene, what I love about Edgar Wright is that comedy in a lot of ways can be such a boring genre in terms of how films are made visually. A lot of times it is kind of just that classic like shot, reverse shot. If you think of like something like a lot of the, you know, Adam Sandler or Will Ferrell or comedies or something like that. A lot of it is just like a character saying something really funny and then you get like a reaction shot. But Edgar Wright uses the medium of film to tell his jokes. So many of the jokes here are in the way he edits a film or paces a film. And you outline that with that perfect Don't Stop Me Now scene where there is literally a comedic set piece in this movie all set and edited to the rhythm of a Queen song, and it's one of the funniest jokes in the movie just because of the way it plays out. He's made a lot of movies since then, and I recommend those as well. You know, The World's End, Scott Pilgrim. He makes really wonderful, and that's the other thing. These movies are warm. They're homages. They're visually creative, but they're really warm films. Like you kind of can't leave his movies without loving these characters in these movies, whether it's Scott Pilgrim, whether it's Sean, whether it's what's his name, in fucking World's End, something Knight, I don't know. But he creates just wonderful, lovable characters. I think if I'm ever having a bad day, just the sheer comedy, creativity, and just humanity of his films just make me always want to turn it on, bring me back, and yeah, makes me feel warm, calm.
Nice.
Comforted and in these scary times.
I mean, if you don't want to feel any comfort in, like, human beings, this next movie is for you. It's a documentary about three identical strangers. That's actually the name of the documentary. This is another one of those Hulu picks where, like, I just kind of, like, scrolled across it one day and happened to be, and just started watching it, thinking, oh, it's just going to be about these three guys that, like, meet each other, and it turns out, oh, they're related, oh, they're brothers. Yes, that happens, but there's a little bit of a mystery to it all, like, because they have these three brothers that didn't meet each other until they were, like, in college. Two of them met because they end up being on the same college campus as one another, which is insane because they were separated as babies, like, 19 years before that, and then came back to go to the same school together, which is wild in itself. But then it turns out there's another guy who, because these two guys found each other on a college campus, looks at a national newspaper and goes, I look just like these guys. And then goes, hey, I think I'm also your brother.
Yeah.
And turns out it's like a triplet situation. At first, they thought it was just twins. Turns out it was triplets. But, like, they try to dive into, like, who are their biological parents. Yeah. And then how they got separated. That is a twist for you to watch.
It takes some turns.
It is dark.
It goes to some really dark places.
It is it's upsetting, like, in a way that I wasn't anticipating.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just one of those things where, like, if you've ever want, if you've ever had, like, zero faith in documentaries being good.
this is just, like, one of those, like, great human stories where it's like, it's so insane that this is real, and it just somehow keeps getting more fascinating. I remember I saw this like in theaters when I came out, and I was just like, how the, like, I kind of thought I knew where it was going, and then it was just like, oh fuck.
Yeah, you, like, you can't anticipate it, and if you do, okay, good for you. but like, for me personally, I did not expect it to take the turn that it did at like right there. I was like, oh well, they've already done all the stuff that I was like, I expected to happen. What else is there gonna be? Are they just gonna just keep talking about this? No.
Well, I have to say, Brian, I think if I might just put this out there, I think in a weird way, your non-comfort movies are kind of a little telling. Like, these do kind of speak to, I think, what movies you tend to gravitate towards, like, movies that are very high concept, movies that are very ambitious, movies that
it's always something when I'm watching a movie and I end up liking it, it's always something that, like, surprises me in some sort of way, like something that I was not anticipating.
There's almost always kind of like a, at least on some level, a bit of experimentation in the movies I feel like that you gravitate towards, and I feel like that's, you can kind of find that in the picks that you mentioned here. These aren't the most straightforward, conventional.
I mean, like, going back and looking at Matinee and realizing as a young kid I was still, like, I was gravitating towards the same kinds of movies then as I am now, was just, like, super surprising to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I think you really can tell a lot about a person's taste based on the movies they like. I'm going to, real quick here, because we're probably going to want to wrap it up for time.
Sure.
I'm going to name a few movies that are also comfort movies to me. I'm not going to dig too deep into them, but they're ones you can find on streaming. So this would have been one that would have been in my top five. I only left it out because of it's so obvious that I didn't think I needed to talk about it. You can find it on Netflix. That's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's just one of my all-time favorite movies.
Dome
great, that great weird yes. Great movie, you've seen it, you love it. If not, get your life straight.
Borrow your dad's car.
And then another is a movie that actually is a bit of an outlier from the rest of the tone of the movies I picked. But it is a comfort movie for me. This is The Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods.
You can find it on...
it's a funny movie.
It is funny. It's a horror movie, but it is funny. It's very meta. You can find that on Amazon Prime right now. If you somehow have not seen this movie or don't know anything about it, try to go in not knowing anything about it because of, man, this movie might not be what you think it's going to be. And then another one of the movies that I wanted to throw out there real quick is 21 Jump Street, a movie that Brian is not a fan of.
Yeah.
But I think is absolutely hilarious. I've seen tons of times. I love it. It's from the same guys who made the Lego Movie.
Which I like.
And,
and the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse, yes. And this is kind of them in the live action realm. Do you got anything else, Brian?
Well, I mean, I'll drop one more name out here. If Bill Street Could Talk is a beautiful romance drama that deals with segregation and like racial injustice. It's also on Hulu. It is a heavy film, but it is beautiful.
So I'm actually, I thought it was done, but you mentioned that I have to throw this out here because I've actually, weirdly enough, it was on my short list here that I had written. If Beale Street Could Talk is obviously the most recent film from Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight.
Yeah.
Prior to these two movies, if you want something a little bit lighter, which is also really great, in the same vein as those two movies, but a lot lighter, he made a movie when he was still in his early 20s, about 10 years before Moonlight, called Medicine for Melancholy. And this is kind of just like a Before Sunrise, type movie. Two people getting to meet each other, know each other.
And just talking.
And just talking.
Just talking.
And it's got like a very, it came out in 2008. It's got a very 2008 indie soundtrack. There's like great indie music in here. And yeah, it's something I feel like a lot of people know Barry Jenkins, but I've never seen that movie. So check that one out too.
Nice.
Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week, Brian. We talked about a lot of movies that people can watch, you know, if they're feeling stressed out or if they're trying to find something that they haven't seen on streaming.
Yeah, take your mind off the global crisis that we're experiencing right now.
Yeah, and thankfully there are still new movies coming out, and I think we're going to be back with some of those next week. We haven't locked down just the two just yet, but we'll be back with new reviews next week, and you guys stay safe out there. And
we'll see you on the internet.
Thanks, guys.